Our guest tonight is Jonathan Young. And some of you may remember Jonathan. Jonathan was actually our last live in-person guest we had at the meeting room before COVID shut us all down. So we thought it was very fitting to invite him back. At the end of that meeting, he said, you know, I could do a whole meeting on coyotes someday. And that's stuck in our mind, and here we are. So I will go ahead and pass it along to Jonathan to tell us about coyotes.
Thanks, Dennis, and thank you everyone for coming tonight. So I guess that would have been, I don't even remember, maybe February 2020, somewhere around like, that time.
Yeah, mid-February.
Yeah, and so if anybody who was there last time, which I think some of you at least were there, you might remember my talk was a really broad brush strokes about what basically the past, present, and future of the Presidio in terms of, or through the perspective of the wildlife there. And I intentionally left out coyotes out of everything to talk about. I intentionally left them out of that talk because, as Dennis just said, it really does, it's a complicated subject and there's a lot to talk about. So I didn't want to just breeze over it. I wanted to give it the justice that it deserves because I know a lot of you, I'm sure, are seeing coyotes, maybe have some nearby in your neighborhoods, maybe potentially even denning. Are you seeing the main title large picture right now? Yes? Okay. So again, I'm going to be talking today about San Francisco coyotes, mostly talking about the coyotes in the Presidio, because that's the family group that I am most familiar with. But I do regularly work with San Francisco Rec and Park and Animal Care and Control, because obviously these coyotes are throughout San Francisco and they know no jurisdictional boundaries. So we need to make sure that across all of these jurisdictional boundaries, whether it's on federal land like the Presidio or city state land, like the rest of San Francisco, that we're maintaining consistent messaging and management practices and things like that. So I'm going to talk a lot about that. Here's just a brief agenda. Of course, talking about the last 2 points, managing coyotes and humans and some of the research and monitoring we've been doing in the Presidio, you really need to cover some of the context before you can really understand the last two topics that we're going to talk about. So I'm first going to talk about some of the context because that's really key into understanding where we are right now with coyotes in San Francisco. So we know that coyotes were in this area long before the Europeans arrived. They were part of the indigenous culture, a lot of the stories, creation stories, things like that. And of course, when the Europeans arrived in 1776, things started to change. The landscape started to change. But of course, these animals were around up into a certain point. And we have records of those. So we have some museum records from Cal Academy. We know the last coyote in San Francisco was around 1928, I believe that says. My screen is cut off. Late 1920s. And we also have some written documentation. So for example, 1860, the Daily Alta, California, had a little article. And I'm going to read it to you because you can't really see that from there. But quote, time was, and not long ago either, when such varmints flocked fearlessly among the chaparral where now stands blocks of buildings. Oops, excuse me. Strange visitor, a coyote not having the fear of rifles and dogs before his eyes, came into town a few nights since and succeeded in capturing a hen from a roost in the vicinity of Mason and Green Streets. The rascal got safely away with his prize. So basically, even back in the early days, of course, when San Francisco was not even a city, these animals were here among a number of other animals that are no longer here. And we had examples here documented of human coyote conflict. And this, I just want to say, keep this in your mind. A coyote taking a hen out of a hen house in 1860. We think that that might be a thing of the past, but that's a little bit of foreshadowing what I'm going to talk about in a little bit. So you think about the social context of where we have been. So compared to where we are now, of course, historically in this area and throughout California and really the United States, predators were not tolerated. And there were actually government-sponsored bounties. People were shooting them for recreation or depredation, so stealing their chickens. They didn't want that, so they'd shoot them. And profit, a lot of profit was to be made in the fur industry. And of course, that has changed with our modern society. We've seen a big decline in the popularity of hunting, and an increase in animal rights and city ordinances. So you cannot, it's no longer legal to shoot, trap, poison, or kill wildlife in urban areas, especially San Francisco. And this is reflected across the state of California in 1974. The state actually outlawed government-sponsored mammalian bounties. So again, a reflection of our societal change where society shifted away from the general acceptance of just kill every predator you see. That's not the case anymore, especially in San Francisco, but throughout California and a lot of the Western states, not all of them. And then on top of that, coyotes' general intelligence and adaptability and behavior allowed them to start to move back into the greater Bay Area and slowly move back in until they got back into San Francisco in 2003. And of course, urban coyotes are not just a San Francisco thing. They are a 21st century phenomenon across the United States. And a lot of these managers across these areas do not understand how to manage these animals. And when I say manage these animals, what I really mean is managing and trying to reduce conflict between humans and coyotes. And that's what I'm going to be talking about. But the traditional approach of just shooting them on sight or trapping them and poisoning them does not really work in urban areas for the social reasons that I just talked about and the legal reasons. You just can't do that anymore in these urban areas. So a lot of urban areas, including San Francisco, are starting to adopt the coexistence stance of understanding and managing these animals and understanding that these animals are here in our urban areas to stay. So a little bit of ecological context. These animals are actually really important in terms of biodiversity and ecosystem functioning through their predation on small rodents that we would consider pests, so gophers and rats and raccoons. We would consider this, or we would term this in some cases, an ecosystem service, meaning that their predation on these small rodents actually provides a tangible benefit to humans. Again, we consider a lot of these small rodents pests, but these animals and other predators like raptors are helping us actually control through their predation, control these smaller creatures. And if you actually were to take these predators away, you actually see an increase in these smaller predators like rats, for example. And what happens when rats go unchecked? They cause a lot of problems with humans, disease, and other issues, but they also cause a lot of impacts to native birds, for example. They will raid the nests of native birds and kill the chicks and the eggs. So having a more balanced ecosystem is something that we strive for in the Presidio, being a national park. We want to promote our biodiversity and increase it where possible. But again, the predation pressures from these predators actually help increase and sustain biodiversity through their ecological checks and balances. Of course, as I said, urban coyotes are notorious, or some might say infamous, for human-coyote conflict, which is the talk of the town these days and has been for a little while. And I just want to, this is really a big part of my job, responding to human-coyote conflict and really trying to manage the situation with the goal of reducing, to the extent possible, conflict between humans and coyotes. And they're really, you need to think about conflict in two terms. Real conflict, so people's pets being taken and killed. Real conflict, potentially somebody being bitten. And we'll talk more about that. That's very, very rare, very rare. But it can happen. That's real conflict. Perceived conflict, on the other hand, is people's fear of the unknown. So somebody might call me in a panic saying, I was attacked by a coyote. When I ask them what happened, they say, I saw a coyote sitting on the lawn and it looked at me. Well, did it bite you? No, it just looked at me. What happened? It just looked at me and then it walked away. So nothing really happened. It didn't attack them. That would be something we would call perceived conflict. But regardless, perceived or real, there is conflict. And it's my job to reduce that conflict. And we're going to talk about that, how I do that, how we do that across the city and through the Presidio. But there are really two main drivers of conflict. We have feeding of these animals, whether directly feeding them to get that perfect selfie shot, trying to coax them in with some food, or indirectly feeding them through garbage mismanagement or leaving your pet food out in the backyard, for example. Feeding coyotes is really, really bad for their behavior, and it causes abnormal behavior, meaning it's coyotes or any wildlife that's being fed for that matter is more likely to actually be a public safety issue. So feeding them is really bad. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. And the other driver of conflict is domestic animals. You can see that picture on the right there. That's actually a picture from the sunset that somebody posted on iNaturalist a couple of years ago. So it does happen. And we're going to talk about that. And then, of course, as I mentioned earlier when I read that article, a coyote raiding a hen house, that still has, that happened recently in San Francisco a couple of years ago, 2018, somewhere over in the Coit Tower area. We got a call and a coyote actually raided a hen house and ran down Lombard Street with a big, in the early morning with a big white chicken. Everybody saw it. So still happens. And of course, a lot of misinformation out there really fuels a lot of a particular perceived conflict, a lot of urban legends and a lot of fear. So a lot of controversy in cities where people and coyotes live with each other. So from these conflicts and a lot of the conversations I have with over the years with many, many people, the number one most frequently asked question is, you know, I don't want you to kill them, but they do not belong here. Please relocate these animals. Right off the bat, it is illegal in the state of California to relocate a coyote. It is not an option. It doesn't work. They want to go right back to where they came from. And usually they get hit by a car in doing so. And again, it's not legal in California. People really need to understand that that is not a legal option in California. Not going to happen. The other one, second to that, is just kill them all. Get rid of them. They don't belong here. Kill them all. There's a lot of complexities in that. Number one is it's not really going to solve any problems to try to eradicate. It's not even possible, first off. But the main issue that you have is these animals are territorial. An established pair will maintain their territory and keep other coyotes that are not part of their family out of that territory. They actually control their numbers through their territoriality. They keep others out. And when you remove coyotes, there is an endless supply in the Greater Bay Area of transient coyotes, those coyotes that do not have an established territory, but are on the move looking for vacant territory, aka transient coyotes. When you remove a resident pair, you create a vacuum, and that vacuum is going to be filled almost immediately. So eradication is not feasible because of what I just explained, but layered on top of that is the social, human social dynamic that I already went through, the idea of the animal rights and the laws around city ordinances about hunting and trapping and poisoning in urban areas. So that's not a real practical option. So managing conflict, again, as I said, one of the biggest drivers really is human behavior. So here in the Presidio, we actually, as a national park, we rent out housing to residents and tenants. So we have a little bit of control in the lease about the rules and the policy around some of these drivers and managing them. So feeding wildlife is illegal in the Presidio. It's illegal in California, period. So it's illegal in San Francisco. We do not allow residents to feed their pets outside. And if you have barbecues outside, we tell people to clean that up after because you're going to attract rodents as well as coyotes potentially. Cats are not allowed outside in the Presidio, not just for their safety, but also to protect our native birds and native reptiles. Leash laws, when and where we have them designated and enforcing those when possible. And then trash management, really important. Trash management for all wildlife, very important. Again, these policies we have more enforcement of because we are the landlords of the residents in the Presidio. But for private property owners and renters in the city of San Francisco, understanding how these types of things can drive conflict and working towards reducing conflict through addressing these issues can really go a long way. Of course, as I said, a lot of misinformation and a lot of fear of the unknown. People, urban areas, they just don't even know what a coyote is. They hear all these rumors. They think they're wolves or grizzly bears. They think they're rabid because they've seen them in the middle of the day. It's not abnormal, nor is it unusual to see a coyote out in the middle of the daytime. And so that's a big part of our work here in the Presidio is increasing coyote awareness, really targeting the younger people, but anybody and everybody, because people need to understand that these animals are here to stay, and it is our behaviors that can really reduce conflict. So we do a lot of presentations to schools and a lot of public presentations like this. We have a living, breathing website that's updated regularly as we get new information, and we really want to address the concerns and the misinformation. And we have very site-specific materials because of the stuff I'm going to talk about in a little bit specific to the Presidio. We can really talk specifically about the coyotes in the Presidio. And this as an example, specifically about San Francisco coyotes. So it really draws people in to know about their local coyotes, not just general coyotes, but their local coyotes. And one of the big things that we do promote, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard, is the concept of hazing. Hazing is a useful tool, and it comes in a variety of flavors, from very mild, like yelling, to very extreme, like even squirting with a hose or throwing things, not to injure, but to scare. It's a useful tool, but it's really not necessary that often. And when and if you use it, so yelling and lunging and throwing and spraying with a hose, say you want to get a coyote off your front lawn, it's very easy to get coyotes to move out of the area. There is a caveat to that that I will get to in just a minute. But in general, it's very easy. Most of the times you just appreciate the coyote. It's usually resting in the sun or hunting gophers. You don't need to do anything. But if there's certain cases like you don't want it in your front yard, it's not that hard to get it to move along, spraying it with a hose, yelling at it, throwing things at it. But again, there's caveats I'm going to talk about. And another very important thing when we're talking about hazing is you need to be aware of where you are in the situation at hand, because the last thing you want to do is scare a coyote and run it out into the middle of the street where there's traffic. You can injure the coyote, you can cause a traffic accident. So you need to be very aware of the idea of using hazing. And again, it's a tool that most of the times you don't actually need to do, but it is very easy to move coyotes along, with some caveats that I'm going to talk about. This is the most important time of the year for dog owners. We are in pupping season right now. Pups have been born. They were born around March into April. They're starting to get a little bigger. They're still generally around the den site location. And it's the most important time. And I'm going to talk about why for dog owners. But when dogs get too close to an active den site, the parents see that dog as a threat to their pups and they will actively chase them away aggressively. So what we do here in the Presidio, again, to reduce conflict, knowing that this is a seasonal driver of conflict, as predictable as the clocks are, you know it's going to happen. So what do? Well, first off, we know we only have one breeding pair in the Presidio, so we know there's only going to be one active den site. What we want to do is identify where that active den site is going to be before the pups are born. And we do that through our tracking and monitoring program, which I'll talk about in a second, and the use of motion-activated camera traps. Allows us to monitor when and where she's starting to dig. This is the alpha female digging her den this year. So she's going to dig a number of dens, and she's only going to select the den she's going to use right about when she's about to drop those pups. So there's going to be a number of dens throughout the Presidio or her territory that she'll be active. So we try to find them, we put cameras on them, and we monitor and we wait. Once we figure out where they are, again, we continue to monitor them. If somebody comes through, people say in a homeless encampment pops up, she will not use that den site. So she has backup den sites. And we keep our cameras on them so that when pups are born, we can monitor the litter. So we can monitor their behaviors. We can monitor the number of pups. We've gotten one litter several years ago. I think it was this year, litter 2015. There were at least 9 pups in this litter. Average litter size is about 6. This year, we've confirmed at least 3 pups. Last year, we confirmed about 3 pups. But it helps us, but it doesn't tell you all the pups unless you get every pup at once in one frame. So we know minimum numbers. So minimum this year is 3 pups in the Presidio. And so I'm just to share more cute little pups. We get to monitor parental behavior and see the pups developing. So you'll see this is from last year, about the same time of year, late May, early June. This is about the same size as the pups are right now, 2021. So they're still weaning off the milk from the mom, but they are starting to eat hard food. And this is about the time where they're going to start to move further and further away from the den site, following their mom and their dad, learning how to be a coyote. So they're starting to move more as a group throughout the Presidio and increasing the chances of coming across a dog during that time, of course. But knowing where an active den site is, the first thing that we do in the beginning of the year, usually around late February, early March, we will put a buffer of no dogs allowed around the larger area of the den site. So closing trails to dogs, not to people, just to dogs. And when we do this, conflict is reduced significantly. It's, again, it's 1 + 1 = 2. Springtime, active den site, there's going to be dog coyote conflict. Creating that buffer, you're really going to see a very big reduction in that conflict. And again, as I said, hazing works occasionally. It's usually not really needed, but there are caveats. The one caveat is during the pupping season, if you have a dog and you come across an aggressive coyote, that coyote is, its parental protective instincts are overriding its fear of you, and it's focusing on getting that dog out of the area. And what we have found is that people think hazing, I need to haze this aggressive coyote. The coyote is not focused on you at all. It's ignoring you. It's focusing on the dog. And all it wants to do is get the dog out of the area. And what's happening is you're trying to haze the coyote. And in so doing, you're keeping the dog planted right there. No, this is not an opportunity, or this is not an appropriate time to haze. This is the time where you need to get the dog and you need to leave the area. That's what the coyote's aggression is telling the dog. Get out of the area now. And at a sufficient distance, that coyote is going to turn around and go back. Whether you see pups or not, if you have a dog and there's an aggressive coyote during this time of the year, chances are very likely that there are pups nearby and you need to get the dog out of the area. And hopefully your dog is on a leash so you can easily do that. And again, at a sufficient distance, the coyote will turn around and go back to where the pups are. Don't try to haze. This is not the time to haze a coyote if you have a dog. Not the time. Just leave the area. Get the dog out of the area. So talking a little bit about the monitoring program. When I came into this position in 2014, again, coyotes have been here since 2003. Traditionally, the Presidio did not have a dedicated staff member to manage coyote conflict. It was very reactive and not proactive. And I got thrown in the hot seat and was so naive and fresh at the time. And there was so much that none of us knew about what was actually going on with the coyotes in the Presidio. So I was looking at what other urban areas were doing, like Colorado, Denver, and Los Angeles, and other urban areas, Chicago in particular, and realized that we can actually start to get very specific information that we otherwise really have a hard time, if not possible at all, to actually answer. How many coyotes are there? What are their activity patterns? Where are the pups going? And what are the fates of the pups? Who's who of these coyotes? Are they healthy? How do their behaviors change through time? All of these questions are notoriously difficult to address and in some cases impossible to actually answer without a more 21st century approach to actually addressing these questions. So using temporary GPS collars, they fall off. You can actively drop them after about a year. Using uniquely colored ear tags, so we know only one coyote at a time is going to have red and yellow ear tags. Who is that animal? We know who that animal is. We know when that animal was born. Taking health screens when we catch these animals, we draw blood, we analyze the blood through our lab partners, fur samples for dietary analysis. We'll talk a little bit more about these things, genetic material so we can start to build family trees and understand the San Francisco coyotes relative to California coyotes, what's going on here, who's breeding with who, things like that, really start to get a 21st century view into the lives of these animals. And some of these stories that we've uncovered and some of the dramas are, I'm going to share with you, they're really just interesting and sad and exciting and happy and all of the above that they'd go totally unknown, under the nose, under the radar. These ghost dogs they have secret lives that are very, very difficult, if not impossible, to really understand. So some of the basic data that we've gotten, some of the activity patterns through the collar activity. Again, most coyotes, we all know, we think of them as mostly active at night. And that is generally the case, but they are active in the daytime. Again, it's not abnormal, nor is it unusual to see a coyote active in the daytime. This is a general pattern. You see a big, so this is through time, night versus day. Now, this is across space. This is just one example. This is the old alpha female. At night, you can see how far she goes. But in the daytime, you can see she really kind of just has her little local daytime hangouts, maybe a hunting spot or maybe the den site. But generally, not too much activity in the daytime, but at night you can really see they really move around at night. So again, difference between across time and across space. So some of the things we are looking into and digging into is revisitations. Why are they revisiting certain areas? Are people feeding them? Or is there something in the habitat that they really like? And what is that feature in the habitat that they really like? A water source, a field full of gophers, things like that. And again, it gives you a good idea of the territory. So the Presidio is 1,500 acres. This is their home range, generally the Presidio, although they do go into Land's End. There are other coyotes in Land's End. So there's a territory butting up against another territory there. And I'm sure there's some conflict between those different groups happening. This type of monitoring allows us, again, to monitor them as individuals. So we can assess their behavior and how does their behavior change through time. Again, if somebody's feeding these animals, that can change their behavior for the bad. And we want to know way before it becomes a public safety issue so we can address it, nip it in the bud. Because once a coyote's food condition and habituated to that, it's more likely that it's going to become an actual public safety issue that is unacceptable in our urban areas. And we'll talk more about what happens in that case, but we want to nip that in the bud and we want to prevent that from even getting to that point. So monitoring them as individuals and tracking them, like revisitation rates in areas like off the grid, the farmer's market. There's a lot of trash when people leave, they don't pick up their trash, and those chili fries, those carne asada burritos, coyotes are going to want to eat that. So some things that can happen, behavior modification, some management tools that we use, simple things like using fences or barriers. So these coyotes have their paths that they use regularly, and sometimes those paths will cross areas where dogs are on paths and can be sources of conflict. Putting a barrier to reroute those coyotes has been really beneficial in a lot of cases. Or in some cases, raising a fence height. Coyotes can jump up to over a 6-foot tall fence. There's even little rollers you can put on top of fences. It spins, so when a coyote tries to climb over the edge, it hits the roller and it'll fall back down. Those are very effective management tools. Barriers work. That's on the easier side of management and behavior modification. But we can go through hazing, different levels of hazing, as I said. One extreme level of hazing that we rarely use, but it has been useful, is the use of paintballs with a slingshot. That has been, it's very rare that we do that, but it has worked in the past. But again, we want to know if we need to do any kind of behavior modification. The fence is kind of a general thing that can capture all wildlife as a barrier. But if we want to target hazing, we want to know who the individual is so we can target the individual. Because again, if their behavior is starting to, the trajectory of their behavior is starting to change, we want to nip that in the bud way in advance. So we want to know who that individual is and target the hazing on that individual. And then of course, if the hazing or if the behavior change is, the trajectory is going in the wrong direction, people keep feeding it or something else abnormal might be happening, we again want to know who the individual is. And if certain levels of public safety or concerns are crossed, depending on the context, it can be a number of different things. Lethal removal is the most extreme end of this management suite of tools. Lethal removal has happened in the past, and it is a tool that is needed in certain situations that we do not take lightly. And if and when it's used, we want to know with 100% certainty who the individual is, who the culprit is, so that we don't take out any innocent coyotes that might be the most ideal, shy, hidden away coyote that you could want. We don't want to take, lethally remove any of those coyotes. We want to focus on the culprit so that we can surgically address the problem at hand. Again, that's a lethal removal is a very, very rare tool and a very complicated tool that we take very seriously. So stepping back a little bit, the Presidio population through time, what we started to really understand is it's always in flux. And this applies to wildlife populations and the San Francisco coyote population. People always want to know a hard number. How many coyotes are in San Francisco? There is no hard number. It's always in flux. There's always coyotes being born during the springtime. There's always coyotes dying. There's always transient coyotes coming and going. It's always in flux. But in the Presidio, again, we only have one breeding pair in the 1,500 acres that is the Presidio. There's the stable long-term residents. And every year they have their pups. In the springtime, pups are born. And as spring, summer, fall come around, a lot of pups don't make it through their first year. And really around the fall time, so before they're even a year old, pups start to disperse, which means they're either adventurous and go out on their own, like a young male looking for its own territory, and or their parents are saying, all right, you're old enough, you're getting out of here, we don't want you here anymore, and they will aggressively chase their own offspring out. Sometimes they'll allow some of their offspring to stay the next year and help raise the next litter, but generally a lot of the pups, if they survive to the fall of that first year, they will start to disperse around that time. And one really interesting example that we were able to track, red and yellow, I showed earlier, a young male born in 2017, he was allowed to stick around and help rear the offspring of his parents in the next year. And then he ended up leaving around, I forget exactly what month he left, but he ended up leaving later that year. And this is his journey south. He went all the way past San Jose. You could see he stuck to the main roads, mostly Camino Real, and he stuck to the urban areas. He had ample opportunity to go out into the wilds, but he's an urban coyote born and bred. He knows how to work in urban areas. He knows the resources. He stuck to that resource. And no doubt when he did get in those wild areas, he no doubt came across some other more wild coyotes. And I'm sure he had some fights that he got into. But ultimately, he turned back up north in the end. You see that lower cluster near Sunnyvale. He ended up taking up residence right at Highway 85 and Highway 280, right in the buffer around the highway. And I was watching his data come in periodically, right there, knowing full well, it's not going to end well, buddy. And then I got a call from Caltrans. They found him dead on the highway. And that transitions to everybody's number one question is, what is the biggest predator of coyotes in urban areas? There are no real predators. It's cars. It's people. Cars. And this is just some of the stats of the coyotes that Animal Care and Control has found on the side of the road every year in San Francisco. Of course, there's many that are getting hit that we're not finding. They're going under a bush somewhere and they're dying. This is just what is being found. And most interestingly, this is just total per year. So you don't get a seasonal dynamic here. This is 5 years of monthly averages. And what do you see there in the fall, September? You see a big spike in roadkill. This also correlates perfectly with the increase in social media chatter and phone calls. People every fall, like clockwork, call up or post on social media, oh my God, I'm seeing coyotes everywhere. They're everywhere. This is the time of the year when those young pups are starting to disperse. They're starting to become more adventurous. They're going out into the world. And more people are seeing them because there's a new generation of coyotes that are young and naive and bold and adventurous, and they're running around the streets. So more people are seeing them. But again, they're young and naive, and like children, they don't know to look both ways when they cross busy roads. Literally, the older coyotes learn to literally look both ways before they cross the roads. So you see a big increase in public sightings of coyotes during the fall, during the seasonal dispersal, you see a big increase in vehicle collisions and roadkill coyotes. This is what happens. If a coyote makes it past its first year, it's going to be more likely to live a longer life because they start to learn really quickly how to navigate these dangerous streets. So this is all the coyotes since we've started tracking this. You can see the colors, the individual colors each year. So you can see the year, the code is the number of the code is the number of the animal that we've captured. So the very top right, purple and orange, 01F. She was the first animal we caught, and F stands for female. She was the former alpha female in 2015. We caught her. Below that is her offspring from 2015. Below that is the next year's offspring, 2016, and so on and so forth. And so this is, we've caught 16 individuals over four litters starting in 2016 when we started this monitoring program. And one of those, actually two of those, are actually outsiders that are not a part of this group. And so of all the tracking that we've done, we want to know the fate of all these animals. All the ones with the red X's have been confirmed, killed, or disappeared. And anytime a coyote disappears, it's assumed that it was hit by a car and died under a bush or something of that nature. But there's these ones in purple that I want to, the top two, red and yellow and purple, I want to give their stories. And then I'm going to hone in on the blue down there because it's some pretty interesting drama that's been going going on this whole time under our noses until we started doing this project. This is Double Red. We've named him affectionately 09M. He was the ninth animal we ever caught, a male born in 2017. We were tracking him in the Presidio. And in August 2018, he left the Presidio. And this is his journey south. And he ended up clustering around the Crystal Springs Reservoir. And this is zooming in there. You can see he started to find his little niche in that area, an unincorporated or an unclaimed territory, or maybe it was claimed and maybe he overthrew the resident pair. And then we started to get the signal from his caller, hey, your battery is running low. It's running low. So we went on the internet and detached it through the satellite connection and it dropped off. We collected the caller because they're reusable and they're very expensive. And once those collars go offline, they're ghost dogs. They're gone. You're never going to see them again until somebody reached out to me, Marilyn Krieger. I recommend you look at her website, urbanedgewildlife.org. Brilliant writer. She's doing a small-scale camera trap study in this area that I showed you. And she contacted me saying, hey, what's up with this coyote? I think someone told me to reach out to you. So look closely. You'll see no collar, but look at those red ear tags. And look at his little friend there. Look closely at her stomach. What do you see? She's been suckling pups. So this was 2019. So he's an example of one of the few coyotes that actually got past that first dangerous year, didn't get hit by a car, made it down, established his own territory, found a mate, and actually had at least one litter of pups. All you need is one litter of pups and you are a successful coyote. You've achieved what you were meant to do, reproduce. So thankfully, because again, this is outside of the Presidio, so I'm not going to go down there and look for this animal. It's not going to even be possible. But because of this camera trap and those tags, we can still monitor this animal. And she's, Marilyn still monitors these camera traps in this area. And here's another, a little gem that she sent me recently, like in 2019. This is a mountain lion cache. And the coyotes found the cache of deer. And they're, look at them. This is living the dream for a coyote. This is, coyotes love decomposing putrid meat. They love it. And I you can see the flies on that meat, right? It's gonna, that probably smells horrible. And these coyotes are just loving life right now. So let's see. So this is his sister, 10F, yellow, it's double yellow, born the same year, 2017. Her collar, she'd be monitored for a year. Her collar ran out of battery, so we detached it. Again, ghost dog, went off the radar. We didn't hear from her. We didn't see from her for about a year until somebody used the application iNaturalist and snapped this pretty little picture of her living her best life down in Candlestick Park. This was, I think, in 2020, maybe 2019. She's still down there. And we are periodically still getting pictures of her from in the Candlestick Park area. Apparently, she's been seen with another animal. We're presuming it's a male. And we haven't confirmed, but we believe she did have a litter this year. So again, very few coyotes actually succeed. Most of them get hit by cars. But some of them actually have made it this far and actually have succeeded in reproduction. iNaturalist is a brilliant way to share your observations. And people like me really use this information. When and where are people seeing coyotes? Are people seeing anything unusual, like, you know, a tagged coyote or an interesting observation? Somebody posted one recently near Stern Grove, not Stern Grove, in Golden Gate Park near the botanical garden. A coyote walking in the middle of the day with a big raven in its mouth. That's really cool. I want to see that stuff. I want to see evidence of reproduction. I want to see even roadkill coyote. We want to track that. I highly encourage you to look into iNaturalist if you don't already. It really helps us. And when you see a coyote, look at the ears. Does it have any tags in its ears? Does it have any facial scars that is a unique identifying characteristic? Make sure you look at those things and help us out. This is the real drama that HBO only wishes they could capture the essence of. So this is the original alpha pair, not the original, the Presidio. We don't know their origin story, but when I started this project, this pair right here was the alpha pair at the time. That's the alpha female with the tags. The alpha male was too smart for us, too wily. We never were able to actually catch him. But in 2019, we caught a female that we didn't recognize. We tagged her, we collared her, and we released her, and we tracked her journey over the next 8 months. We weren't sure who this animal was. We're pretty sure she wasn't part of the family unit. Not clear who she was because we haven't analyzed her genetics yet, but we tracked her for 8 months, and this is her journey over 8 months. So each slide is about a month of data. This is what we would call a transient animal. She's going around where other coyotes occur. Bernal Heights, for example, she was challenging that Bernal coyote and they got into a bloody battle. The Bernal coyote won and moved Double Red out of there. Potrero had its own coyotes. She got into doubt. And look at her back in the Presidio. And look at that cluster right there. What is that's like a territorial cluster right there if I've ever seen one. So when she came back not alone. She came back with another animal, a male. And we ended up catching this on film just by random chance in one of our security cameras. This is an edited version of a territorial battle between an established female coyote and a transient pair that's coming through. But what I want you to see is this is the middle of the day and there's people all over the place. Look at in the background, there's people. And hopefully my face is not blocking that corner view there as it is in my screen. Again, this is an edited version, but the actual incident was much longer. It doesn't go much longer, but so you can see the transient pair going down and chasing. Where's the original alpha female's mate? Where is he? We don't know. We lost track of him. Again, we never tagged him. We never collared him. He just stopped showing up. So we presume he was probably hit by a car, potentially died of old age. We don't know. That's the male right there. And the two females are going at it down there. And I saw the staircase after this happened, and it was bloody. It was bloody. This is what coyotes do. We need to check our human emotions when we watch this stuff because it can be sad. But this is how coyotes are. This is coyote. They're territorial. This is what they do. And it can be hard to see this happening. But again, these are wild animals, and this is what they are acting. This is their behavior. But look at it. There's people in the background. There's just like car. Nobody knows this is happening. And we wouldn't know if these animals weren't tagged, we would have no idea what's going on right now. Are these brothers and sisters fighting? What is happening? But because we know they're tagged, we know who they are, we're fully aware of the drama that's happening right here. And ultimately, this is the original alpha female from her early days. Again, we don't know her origin story. This is from iNaturalist from, I think, 2013. She's really young there. She could have been born in the Presidio. We don't really know. But we know it's her, even though it's way before we tagged her, because look at that birthmark under her left eye. She's always had that birthmark. She ultimately left the Presidio after she was overthrown by that pair. And she was seen around town, sad, because she lost her mate. She lost her territory. She was dethroned. And you could tell she was sad. Her ears were droopy. She just looked ragged and sad. She was ultimately found dead on the side of the road in Pacifica. And it's really tragic that happened. Again, she was a long-lived animal. We don't know her true age, but we still are analyzing all the data. So we will eventually get to that. And this is the new regime. Again, established 2019. We're monitoring them. They've had two litters. This year's their second litter. So they are a successful urban pair of urban coyotes. And again, they're not, I don't want people to look at them and say, oh, they're jerks. They hurt the original alpha female. No. You need to not think about it that way. These are animals being animals. They have their lives. They have their pups. This is how they are. And we're going to continue to monitor them and see what happens. They might get overthrown next year or this year. Who knows? They might live for another 10 plus years. Coyotes can live up to 13 plus years. So just to start wrapping it up, we're collecting a massive amounts of data. We don't have the expertise or the resources here in the Presidio to analyze half of what we've collected, the genetics, the fur sample, all that. So we've started to really ramp this up and reach out and partner up with local universities, UC Berkeley and UC Davis. There's a PhD student at UC Davis that's doing her whole PhD dissertation on San Francisco coyotes and is really starting to dig deep into these coyotes on a molecular level, on a genetic level, on a landscape level. It's some really cool stuff, and I'm really excited to see the results from that. But we still have a lot of time before that starts to really pick up some momentum. But again, a lot of this information is new to us, new to city managers in San Francisco and the Bay Area. There's a lot of people in the Bay Area that are calling me managers. They have no idea what to do about the coyotes in their municipality. They want to know, they want to learn from us. So we're making headway here, learning these management strategies, what works, what doesn't work, learning and understanding the biology, the ecology of these animals, learning the, how to reduce conflict between humans and these animals. And we're helping educate the greater Bay Area because these coyotes are not going anywhere. More and more, all the way as far out as the Sacramento, people are calling me, what do we do here? Can you help us out? So we're sharing this information with the ultimate realization that these coyotes are not going anywhere. What can we do to reduce conflict with these animals? Because it is possible to reduce that. It's impossible to get rid of it completely, but it's possible to significantly reduce that. So just to wrap it up, coyotes are part of a healthy ecosystem through their consumption of these small rodents and pests like raccoons. Checks and balances, we want to think healthy, balanced ecosystem. Our behaviors as humans can really, really drive these conflicts. So we need to remember how our behavior drives these conflicts, whether it's perceived conflict or real conflict. We can only manage coyotes so much. It's more about managing human behavior than it is about managing coyotes. Hazing is a tool that works. Not in every case. Remember, if you have a dog during the pupping season, hazing is not the right thing to do. Get the dog out of the area. But hazing can work. It's a tool that is often not needed. Pupping season, again, is the most significant time right now for dog owners. Right now is the most significant time for dog owners to understand coyotes and dogs. What does it mean when you come across an aggressive coyote with your dog during this time of the year? There's probably pups nearby. You need to get the dog out of the area. Do not try to haze the coyote. It's not going to work. And reporting, I didn't really talk too much about this. iNaturalist is a good way to share your observations. But if you see something that you're unsure of, abnormal behavior, somebody's feeding coyotes or any wildlife for that matter, you need to report that. There's conflict. You need to report that. If you're in the Presidio, you need to report it to me, coyote@presidiotrust.gov. Our information is all over the website, presidio.gov/coyote. Anything in the Presidio, report to the Presidio Trust. Anything in San Francisco, default to San Francisco Animal Care and Control. Just don't even worry about SFPD. They're not going to help you. Animal Care and Control is the default place to report things of concern. But general observations, iNaturalist. Animal Care and Control, they don't need to know that you saw a coyote. They're going to see it on iNaturalist. But they need to know concern, things of concern. And if you're not sure if it's concern or not, just report it and give them detailed description. It's very, very essential that you report things like that. And I'm going to end it right there and open it up to questions. So thank you all for allowing me to share this with you.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. I'll answer some of the, or excuse me, I'll give you some of the questions that are in the chat, and then you can continue later. The first question is, do they, coyotes, get tracked by some organization? I think I'm seeing the same ones repeatedly in Golden Gate Park.
So in terms of tracking, nobody else in San Francisco is doing the high resolution tracking. As when I say that, I mean the tagging and the collaring. Nobody's doing that. But San Francisco Rec and Park and Animal Care Control, they do track what's going on with coyotes and people in terms of where are their dens, where is their conflict. They track that stuff. They use camera traps as well. So people are tracking what's going on, but they're not tracking on the same level that we are here in the Presidio.
Next question is, do coyotes carry diseases that our pet dogs can catch?
That's a great question. And again, as I said, every time we catch a coyote, we take samples to screen them for this type of thing. Coyotes can carry relevant canine diseases such as distemper, toxoplasmosis, and parvo. There has been some evidence that we have found that a few of the coyotes have been exposed to those various that I mentioned in the Presidio. And it's really important to understand that's why you want to have your dogs properly vaccinated. Because these things like parvo can actually remain in the environment in the soil for years. So you need to vaccinate your pets for reasons like that, but also your pet can contaminate and it can spill over into the wildlife population. So it goes both ways. Toxoplasmosis comes from cat feces, for example. So it's something that people need to understand that it goes both ways. And so it is in the environment. Raccoons can get it and raccoons can spread it. There's a system that's going on. The dynamics of disease in urban areas is a real thing. And so we need to think about, as pet owners, how do we vaccinate and keep our pets safe?
Next question. Human injuries, have they happened in California? Do they matter?
Yes, they have happened. There was the most recent one in the deep East Bay that resulted in the lethal removal of a number of coyotes, including the culprit. They don't know exactly why, but I suspect somebody was feeding this one coyote and the coyote started to develop that behavioral pattern that, again, is abnormal and we do not want to happen because that's what results. It results in coyotes or any wildlife for that matter biting people. There has, in all of the United States, there's only one confirmed death of a human due to a coyote, and that was in Los Angeles in the 1980s. A young girl was killed, and it was tied to the parents were feeding this coyote in their backyard. And ultimately, when they weren't watching the kid, the coyote came in the backyard and attacked her. Again, this is what we need to understand, is that these were driven by human behaviors. That's not to say that coyotes can't become abnormal for other reasons. A lot of people think immediately, oh my God, coyotes are going to be rabid. And everybody knows the stories of rabid animals attacking people. Canine rabies, the strain of rabies that is in canines, coyotes and dogs, is so rare in California that it's not even on the radar of the state veterinary board. So a rabid coyote in San Francisco is not going to happen. Although bats in San Francisco have been found to be rabid, there's different strains and those don't spill over to canines. So again, people have been bitten in the Bay Area by coyotes recently. And that's most certainly been linked to abnormal behaviors, probably from feeding. So that's something to keep in mind. Again, our behaviors tend to drive conflict with these animals. And diseases can drive conflict, but things like rabies are not, it's not present in California, canine rabies.
Next question is, I love that we have a thriving coyote population and view it as a positive. How do you address people's fears who are scared of them?
Again, number one is people fear what they don't know. I had a conversation every time I give, when it was in public, used to be in public, people would come up to me after, you know, some people would say, you know, I still don't like them, but I understand now the complexities around the situation and how they can help. One guy came up to me and he said, you know, I had no idea that coyotes eat gophers and rats. And I was actually shocked. Like, what do you mean? Isn't that really obvious? No, some people think it's like, oh, they only live on dogs and cats. It's not true. So there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot, people don't know. I mean, people don't know what a raccoon is. I've talked to people, they think they're seeing they're seeing a bear, but they're seeing a raccoon. So education and awareness really goes a long way. But you're never going to completely remove the fear from everybody. Just like you're never going to remove conflict. As long as these animals are here, there's always going to be some potential for conflict and fear. But again, education goes a very, very long way. And there are tools that we can have as citizens and private property owners and residents of the city that we can help increase our confidence and actually modify the coyote's behavior. If you don't want them in your yard, there's certain things that are attracting them to your yard that you might actually be able to manipulate and change and discourage them from coming into your yard. So education and awareness can go a long way at reducing fear.
Next question is, what do the paw prints look like?
So paw prints look like dog paw prints, but there are different subtle signs. If you get a really good one and some really clean mud, you can tell if it's a dog or a coyote. The biggest one to know, and I just encourage you, if you really want to look, go Google dog versus coyote prints. But you can tell by, think of a dog print with the toe pads and then the main pad. A coyote, there's a space between the toe pads and the main pad. Coyote has a very, very small space. Dog, domestic dogs have a relatively large empty space right there. And there's other things you can look at, like the nails and the spread of the toes, but you can Google that and get a really good image of what you're looking at.
Next question is, are there coyotes currently in the botanical gardens related to the coyotes in the Presidio?
We don't know yet, but again, that's part of this PhD study is looking at the genetics of that. But I would put money that they are related somehow. I think most of the coyotes in San Francisco have some relation to each other, I would imagine. But we're not there yet. We are still accumulating genetic material and going to be analyzing that through UC Davis.
Next question. How often do coyotes have pups in the urban environment?
It's a seasonal thing. Every spring, if they have a mate, if they have a suitable site, a den location, and they're pretty adaptable and pretty flexible in what that entails. So Coit Tower, think about Coit Tower. It's like a postage stamp. There is a breeding pair and they've been having pups there every year, once a year, only one time a year, for many years. It's a tiny little area, but they've done it. So I'm sure coyotes can have miscarriages. I'm sure that's happened. Potentially, I haven't seen this yet, but I could see where maybe one season might not be suitable. So, you know, it's going to be dependent on, say, rains are going to dictate the amount of vegetation, which is going to dictate the abundance of gophers and rodents. So all of these things are complicated. The ecosystem is very complex with the weather and the climate, and, you know, droughts are going to change the food supply, and the food supply is going to change the hormones of the female, and the hormones are going to dictate the litter size and yada, yada. It's very complicated, but in general, one litter a year for one pair in their territory.
Just a comment. The migration is fascinating, and another fascinating, and you sort of answered this, but I'll say it again. Do you collaborate with Golden Gate Park on their coyotes, which I think you sort of answered that.
Yep. Reckitt Park and Animal Care Control and the Presidio Trust and the National Park Service and occasionally CDFW, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. But Reckitt Park, Animal Care and Control, and Presidio Trust, we are a tight-knit group. We've been working together for years now. And again, we want to maintain consistent messaging, management, and monitoring. They need to be consistent. That's key. Consistency is key.
Well, a lot of thank yous and excellence in the chat room. Are there any other questions that anyone wants to pop into the chat room or give us? It would seem not. I want to thank Jonathan for just an excellent, interesting presentation. And again, if any of you came in late or you just want to review this again, it will be on the Sharp Facebook page. And the audio version, audio alone, you don't need Facebook or anything special, will be on the Sharp website under past meetings. And that'll be up there probably in a couple days. You can listen to the whole presentation, not the video, but just to just hear it. And again, a lot of you came in later. I want to mention that you probably got some, you got an email. If you're a member in good standings with Sharp, you would have gotten an email about the Sharp election of officers. So please answer that email and and vote for the Sharp officers. And that's about it. I normally tell you what's coming up next, and we're actually working on a couple things, but we don't have the next meeting scheduled. We're working on two things. One might be a meeting on Western San Francisco history trivia, and another would be on Victorian Edwardian architecture. And those are the two things we're trying to get scheduled for the beginning of next month. So unless anybody has any more questions, again, Jonathan, thank you so much for a terrific presentation.
Thanks for having me.
We'll have to come up with another subject for next time around.
Oh, I got all kinds.
Yeah, well, you will be called upon then, clearly. All right. Thank you very much, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.